Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could spend part of your day with us. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We will get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. So the big theme for today's show is based on an NFL.com article, Paul, that just came out. And what they did was they ranked the top five cornerback tandems in the National Football League. And why did it catch our attention? Well, there seems to be a familiar tandem that is in the mix on this list. So we felt that we'd at least review it. We also want to focus on the NFC East because those are the cornerback tandems that the Giants are going to have to deal with. And then your thoughts on this list and perhaps if there was a group that people are overlooking. So without further ado, the Giants, number three on the list. Now, they are grouping it Janoris Jenkins and Eli Apple. Why? Because those are the two outside corners. But DRC is mentioned in parentheses, and they've done that for a few of these tandems.
Well, that's because they're calling it the best tandems in the league, which a tandem is two. So you have to address the two outside guys in making the list. But then, as you mentioned, they are very much aware of the fact that the slot corner is a significant portion of the team's secondaries. So that's why they're kind of including them in the copy. But when they actually, you know, announce the list, they're calling them tandems.
And in terms of the rationale behind why they're high on the Giants, they even talk about DRC's versatility.
Yes.
And the fact that he was able to move around and had a career year, too. I mean, we tend to forget about that. And I think, Paul, when you look back at last season, a lot of the conversation is, unfortunately, him going down in the Packers playoff game. But that should not overshadow how consistent he was during the course of the season. He led the team with six interceptions, and people forget about that.
You know what, Lance? I talked about it since the beginning of the year, first month of the season. I thought he was playing outstanding football. And for those folks who've been watching this program, they know throughout the course of the season, I was just absolutely glowing over DRC. I was trying to tell people he's having, you know, what certainly the best season of his Giants career.
Oh, yeah.
Whether or not it was the best of his entire career, you know, look, he had a couple of Pro Bowl years in the past with the Broncos and the Cardinals. It's not like he had not gone to Hawaii before.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I want to quantify it as the best year of his career, but certainly the best I'd ever seen him play on a week-to-week basis. And that's why I was so perplexed when so many of the writers were talking about him being on his way out at the end of the season, figuring that he was going to be a salary cap casualty. That never made any sense to me, and I said it on this program 1,000 times. DRC's not going anywhere. Why would he?
Well, if anything, didn't he prove his value by not being on the field in the playoff game? If anything, that helped his cause.
Unfortunately, yeah. Again, and I know I'm in the minority on this, too. I still think his injury was the most significant play in terms of the Giants' downfall in Green Bay, period.
That changed the dynamics of the game.
Not the drop passes. DRC's injury was the biggest thing that affected that game, period.
You're the opposing quarterback. You're looking at the personnel on the field, and you're going to test the guys that are behind the top-caliber corners on the team. So it's no surprise that Aaron Rodgers took advantage of that. So the Giants' tandem is number three. Let's at least put that in perspective. Number one on the list is the Jacksonville Jaguars. Interesting choice. They were very aggressive in free agency, and they brought in A.J. Boye from the Houston Texans, one of the top corners on the market, and they're pairing him now with Jalen Ramsey, who will be entering his second season in the NFL. Number two was Aqib Talib and Chris Harris, and then in parentheses, Bradley Roby. By far, the Denver Broncos, one of the best defenses in the NFL, so I'm not surprised to see them in that group.
No, I was a little surprised to see the Jaguars number one, though,
I agree with you there.
On the listing.
Yeah.
I think those guys merit consideration to be up near the top. I don't know that I'd put them ahead of the Broncos guys.
Yeah, I would have put probably Denver number one. Now, if you want to make the argument, well, why is Jacksonville even ahead of the Giants? If the Giants, you could say, have more veterans. But here's the thing. If you're including Eli Apple in the tandem, Jalen Ramsey's at the same level. They're both young players that don't have much of a resume. So I don't think he can maybe give an argument to say the Giants have a significant edge over the Jaguars other than DRC being in the slot.
Well, I personally would have put the Jaguars somewhere in the lower portion of the top five, and I would have put the Giants number one and Denver number two, but I would have been willing to listen to somebody who told me Denver number one and the Giants number two. I could have agreed to disagree on that, but I don't think the Giants are taking a backseat to anybody in the NFC, that's for sure.
And that's why I would agree with what you're arguing there. I'd say, you know, Denver won because they've been established. They've been playing together
yes.
for a few years. I think that deserves a little bit more credit.
I could not shake my head on that. If someone wanted to say Denver was one, I would accept that.
Number four, right behind the Giants at three, is Jason Verrett and Casey Hayward of the Los Angeles Chargers. Hayward added to the team last year. He came over from Green Bay. And then Jason Verrett's a young up-and-coming corner. Unfortunately, tore his ACL in October last year, so he's trying to recover from that injury. But I thought the Chargers made huge strides in their secondary because of those two players in particular.
Yeah, but because of the injury, I'd have a hard time putting him there right now because you just don't know how that leg is going to respond. And certainly, even if he gets back to his pre-injury level, it's probably going to take a year. So for me to put them right there right now, I'm kind of wishy-washy on that. I would have put the Patriots in that spot.
Well, but here's the thing about the Patriots that I question. It's Malcolm Butler and Stephon Gilmore. Now, Gilmore is a household name. He's with the Buffalo Bills in the early stages of his career. But he also hasn't played one snap with the Patriots yet. Now, I understand you're on your island sometimes. You don't necessarily need to know what the other corner is doing.
Well, we're talking about the guy's skill set.
Correct.
I don't think we're necessarily talking about how he fits into the team at the moment.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is I give Denver – the reason why I would push Denver up is because of the continuity of the unit, the fact that the guys have played well with one another, they've been consistent, the production has been there, and I think if the Giants do that again this season, that only helps their stock, whereas mm-hmm. the Patriots, you got Malcolm Butler. You know what he's done in the scheme. You
yes.
don't necessarily know what Gilmore is going to do because we have yet to
that
see
is
one
true.
Game. So that would be my only argument to
okay.
perhaps – say, why would I move New England up
I'm not sticking my feet in the cement on this one.
And then the two honorable choices, the mm-hmm. Vikings and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Bucs with Brent Grimes, the veteran, Vernon Hargraves, another veteran. He came over from Tennessee not too long ago to join Tampa Bay. And then Xavier Rhodes and Terrence Newman, as well as Trey Waynes, their young slot corner in Minnesota. And the Vikings on paper, I mean, that defense overall was very solid last year. Unfortunately, they, you know, suffered a number of injuries down the stretch last year that had them fall off. But I think even those two honorable mentions are fair as well.
I'm not a big Terrence Newman guy, but the other two Vikings corners I like very much. So I would not have hesitated to move them into the top five, to be honest with you. As far as the other one was Tampa Bay,
yeah.
To me, Grimes had his best years with the Falcons, and I think he's on his way down. I don't think he qualifies as an elite cover corner anymore, at least in my opinion. And as far as Hargraves, you know, coming out, there were people who said he would be a better cover corner than Eli Apple was. But the bottom line was, this past season, he did prove what the critics said coming out of college. Not very good in run support and a sloppy tackler. Now, does he have cover skills? Absolutely he does. But there's more to playing cornerback in this league than just being able to shadow somebody. You better be able to come up and run support, and you better be able to tackle guys when they get the ball, especially some of these big, fast wide receivers that are in the league today.
And Hargraves, you're right, is the young corner. I misspoke. I was thinking of Alteron Verner, who was the guy
okay.
that came over from Tennessee that went to Tampa. So you're right. Vernon, is the younger of the two guys between mm-hmm. Vernon as well as Hargraves. But Grimes, I agree with you there, Paul. I think you brought up an interesting point. People tend to forget he was with the Falcons, then he tore his ACL, and then he was working his way back. He joined Miami and then wound up, obviously, with Tampa Bay in free agency.
I don't think he's the same player that he was at
that point. I would agree with you.
Point.
I think there has been a drop-off. I mean, for their needs, though, they need a veteran in there. I understand, you know, why they brought him into the mix. And remember, Dirk Cutter was in Atlanta when Brett Grimes was there. So you have to understand the connection that they're going to take a chance on a guy they're familiar with.
The interesting part about the Chargers is that Brandon Flowers has the concussion or came off the concussion last year that ruined his season. And right now he's a veteran free agent and he wants to come back and play. And to this point, I don't know that anybody has cleared him. And, you know, is he okay? I don't know the answer to that. Is it a matter of people being a little queasy because he had two concussions last year, and they don't even want to take a chance? I don't know. What I do know is he's a very good cornerback, and by far the best available free agent cornerback still on the market. But, again, different people are going to feel differently about dealing with a guy who's coming off a concussion.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls. We'll get to your tweets here in a second. In terms of the division, Paul, I think it's always interesting to take a look at, okay, well, what does Eli Manning and company have to deal with? Now, keep in mind, nobody else in the NFC East made this list. So I think that says about where the Giants are in comparison to the rest of the division, at least
well,
entering the 2017 season. I don't think anybody's going to complain about that.
Right.
Now, when you look at the other three teams, what I see is I see a lot of question marks across the board. Probably the team with the most question marks, and I want to start there, and you may disagree. You're probably going to point to Dallas because I know you brought them up. I think Philadelphia has the most question marks at the cornerback position, more so than Washington and Dallas, and here's why. Once again, they've completely revamped the secondary, and they've been doing this, Paul. It's like an annual tradition. It's like the Masters, a tradition
well,
unlike
Troy
any other.
Since Troy Vincent was there, you know?
I mean, it's amazing how every year you look at the Philadelphia Eagles secondary, you're like, oh, they wound up bringing this guy in.
Remember Eric Allen? That goes back a ways,
doesn't
it? Yeah,
well, you're going really back here. But this is who, right now, the Philadelphia Eagles are projected to throw
out there. Mills and Robinson.
Patrick Robinson, the veteran. Mills is a young guy who they've also moved around on the outside in the slot. So that is something to at least take into consideration. No. And then they have Ron Brooks, who's another veteran who's with Buffalo. The appeal of Brooks is working with Jim Schwartz in the past. And Schwartz is now the defensive coordinator in Philly, so there's familiarity with the scheme. But there's not a lot of depth, though. Forget about the starters. Remember, they drafted Sidney Jones, Paul. Sidney Jones, there's no guarantee that he's even going to be ready by the middle of the season.
No.
That was more of a long-term projected type of pick. So, I mean, Philly's got question marks in terms of depth, and Philly has question marks in terms of who they're even throwing out as the starting caliber cornerbacks.
I agree. I think they're a mess at corner, and that's something that they're going to have to try to overcome and scheme around. In fact, let's face it, folks, it's been that way for a while, and that's one of the reasons why the wide nine and that ferocious pass rush that they've had for the last several years has been the number one component in terms of them leaning on to try to win games. So I'm with you on that one.
Then the next team in terms of question marks, then I would probably put the Dallas Cowboys. As we're working our way up, because
you did
I
see what happened with Nolan Carroll, right?
Correct. Well, that's
he's got himself a problem,
off the field issue. Yes, and we'll see whether or not he winds up being suspended, which is then going to eat into their depth chart even more. But the reason why I'm putting Dallas lower than Washington is Washington's going to throw out two veterans who have been in the system at least for a year, and that's being Breland and Norman. With Dallas, Carroll's a veteran, but Carroll's new to the team. Carroll has not played. Anthony Brown, he was on the team last year, a young up-and-coming corner, but still some question marks in terms of his up-and-down
no
play.
Doubt.
The only proven commodity who has been on the team for a while but also brings some baggage in terms of injuries is their slot corner, and that's Orlando Scandrick.
Yeah.
So you do see some question marks there. I think that's fair to say. I don't think that's a stretch.
No question about it.
And then their safeties, you can argue, a little bit more established in terms of what Byron Jones and Jeff Heath are going to bring to the table. But we're specifically right now talking about the corners. So then you get to Washington, Josh Norman, as well as Bashaud Breland, two guys that were both there last season. I mean, Norman, we can get into the antics on and off the field, but if you just look at him as a player.
He's a solid player.
Solid player.
But I don't think he's elite.
Well, I mean, elite, depending on how we define
elite. I think he's below. I think he's on that next level down. I'm sorry. Here's why I say this. Elite corners, not only do they get after the ball and are really good ball hawks, but the other thing that it is that they do, they break up a high percentage of passes that are thrown to the receivers who they cover. Okay? Norman doesn't get enough of those.
The PBUs.
Well, PD, passes defensed.
Or, yeah.
Which is fine. Same thing. You're talking about passes broken up.
Correct.
Same thing. I think you've got to have a higher percentage of that stat because you could say, well, teams aren't throwing at him. Okay, well, if they only threw to him six times during the course of a game, and one was complete, and the others were just either drop passes or overthrows, how is that a credit to the quarterback?
Because the quarterback, you're saying, was off the mark.
Right.
In terms of, yeah. Well, that's why, like you said, all of these analytics, you can't always put so much substance
exactly.
in
them. Exactly.
You have to understand what they're telling you.
Now, what it does tell me is if there were six passes thrown at a corner, one completion, and three passes broken up.
It says a lot more.
Now, in that case, the stats actually do mean something because the player physically broke up those passes. That takes coverage. You can't break up a pass if you're not covering the receiver really well. So in that instance, the stat is valuable. In the flip instance, it's not necessarily telling you what you need to know.
The number alone, you have to know basically what each throw looked like and how the play broke down.
Yes.
But here's the other thing, and maybe you and I disagree, but I also, when you're evaluating a corner, I mean, you clearly want to know the guy that it's difficult to throw his way, he deflects passes, I get that, and that's part of the criteria. I also look at a good corner being a guy that, if he's keeping his offensive player in front of him, if he's not allowing a lot of yak yardage, Paul, he's not allowing a lot of big plays, meaning a cover corner, he can allow catches, but they could also be doing very limited damage is the point
that's
that I'm bringing
too
to the table. I think you also need to take that into consideration
that's
as
true
well.
Too. And that's, this is why, this again, another case for why the analytics people, you know, are just so into numbers that they don't really get into the beef or the heart of the matter. Because, all right, how about this? Guy catches three passes on eight targets against the specific corner. All three were for first downs. And all three were on third down conversions.
Well, that's...
Now, that means
that's
something,
extremely
right?
Meaningful. Yeah.
That's meaningful.
When you need a stop and you're giving up a first down.
Okay, but if there were three catches on eight targets, but all three were short of first downs and did not move the chains...
That's even more impressive.
Now, that's maybe more impressive to the corner than it is to the receiver. But if you move the chains on three of them, well, then that's a detriment to the corner. So, you see... Great example, Lance. Just a great example. We've now cited already a couple of different angles on how you can look at a certain stat and you can read anything into it. I do think that when I've seen Norman go up against elite receivers, all right, we see him on TV enough. Redskins do get on TV here in New York enough of times where you can watch. And obviously you guys know I watch a lot of tape. I don't see Norman break up as many passes as I think he should for the kind of game he professes to have.
That's fair. I think, to be honest with you, I thought he did more of that in Carolina than he's done since he's moved to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Because at Carolina, and I'm just remembering plays here or there, I didn't look at the numbers that carefully. Carolina, I felt, and maybe this is part of also, this goes back to when you have personnel around you.
Yes,
that
it
allows
does.
Things to be a little bit easier.
Yes, it
you
does.
Can take more
is there
chances.
A pass rush?
There you go.
Absolutely.
And what did he have in Carolina? He had a tremendous amount of pass rush.
Are your
rush.
Safeties any good behind
Correct.
You?
Exactly. Now,
it
in
all
no
makes
way,
a difference.
Exactly.
I get it.
And I'm not making a case to say that he's overrated. Don't misinterpret my words. Now, I'm sure a lot of Giants fans passionately feel that way. That's not why I'm bringing that up. The point is, though, this is the criteria you have to take into consideration when you evaluate a corner. You can't just look at eight attempts, three catches, all of a sudden, that's elite.
Well, you remember when Norman had, obviously, he likes to pop off about Odell Beckham. Well, how about the fact that Beckham caught game-tying touchdown pass right here in the building across the street last year? I mean, yeah, it was only one completion on one target, but that was a pretty big completion.
Of course, in terms of
you
the
know,
timing of the game.
Who won that battle?
Yeah. And those are all things, like I said, especially because what do we see all the time, Paul, after a game when you have an elite wide receiver against an elite corner, they always throw the numbers.
Yes,
right? That's
and
the
usually,
first thing that's always thrown out.
And usually they'll give you just the wide receiver's numbers.
Correct.
They won't even tell you the defensive back's numbers,
exactly.
Which I find very funny.
Yeah.
You know, they won't even tell you that. They'll just give you, six catches, 85 yards, and a touchdown. And that's all they'll tell you. And they won't give you the passes defensed, the interceptions.
They won't.
They won't tell you about any penalties that might have been called.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too.
Big part of it. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, what happens if the wide receiver had six catches, he had 17 targets in the game? You want to know what's happening with those 17
well,
targets.
Well, how about this? How about this? Receiver catches one pass in six targets, but there were three pass interference calls on the corner. So did the corner have a great day? I'm just asking.
No, I think those are all fair points. And we want to hear from you, too. I mean, in terms of how you evaluate the cornerback position, I think it's all relevant. And that brings us beyond the Redskins to the Giants being the top team, at least in our eyes on paper, in terms of the cornerback distribution. The only thing I did want to throw out before we get to the phone lines, Quentin Dunbar, I think, is an overlooked cornerback for Washington. He was a former wide receiver. He's made some nice special teams plays. That's another reason why I would give Washington the edge over Dallas
okay.
in terms of some of their depth and some of their versatility. All right, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. NFL.com released its top five cornerback tandems. The Giants are number three on the list. Jacksonville's one, Denver's two. Your thoughts on those rankings, your thoughts on some other teams that have been overlooked, as well as what you think this division looks like at the cornerback position, and anything else you want to delve into here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Jason is in Maine. He gets us started. What's happening, Jason?
How are you guys today?
Doing well, Jason. What do you got for us?
Good. I had two things for you. First, I'm really excited that Brandon Marshall's here. I was really excited to hear that he came onto the team. I'm just wanting to ask you guys, as a defense planning to face the Giants' offense now, what are the new problems that would be presented having him on the team now with Odell Beckham?
Well, the red zone, I think, is one of the first things that comes to mind, Paul, in terms of another target for Eli Manning when they get down within the 20-yard line, Jason. I mean, that would be one of the first things that I would throw out. And then I also think that you need to take into consideration last year, Victor Cruz was your outside receiver. Sterling Shepard was mainly in the slot. Beckham was your other outside receiver. And Marshall clearly has a height advantage over Cruz. I think there's also much more of a separation that Marshall brings to the table. We're going to have to see it, much more so than maybe Cruz. So even within the flow of the offense, you can make the argument how the three corners, who they need to focus on. I don't think it's going to be so easy to say we're going to roll the safety automatically to Beckham's side.
I agree.
And we're not going to worry about the other guys. That's where I think the biggest difference is.
I think that's a big deal. I think the blocking on the edge is a very big deal because Brandon Marshall does that very effectively. And the Giants should be able to get some more runs outside the box with Marshall knocking smaller corners out of the way. I think that's a pretty big deal, too. And then the other thing, also, Marshall played some slot with the Jets. Let's not forget that. And he is very, very willing to go over the middle on a slant or on a crossing route. So if the Giants go into a four-wide package, it's not out of the question that Shepard could be in one slot and Marshall could be in the other. Or for that matter, they could be in a three-man bunch.
Trips, yeah.
And going out of a trips formation, not out of the question that Marshall might wind up breaking it off and running the slant. I mean, the guy's 6'5", okay? Imagine Eli looking at a guy 6'5", about 10 yards, 15 yards down from him. That's an easy completion.
And then here's the other thing. I think Brandon Marshall is also very effective off a screen, which has been a troubling aspect at times for the Giants. So that, I think, could be something also new to look at.
Well, I've presented, I think I did on this program before, Lance, you may have been with me at the time when I first broke it out. Think about the wide receiver screen in particular. If you're going to line up two or three receivers on one side, and let's say you're going to give it to Shepard and have in front of him, okay, Marshall and Ingram.
Yeah. Different person.
How about that?
The mixing and matching. And I'll take it even a step further.
Those two guys can knock out a bunch of small defensive backs in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And speaking of all of these different formations and the focus for the corners, I'm very interested to see what it does to open up the play of the tight end position this season. Meaning, how much more does the middle of the field become open as a result of what the other wide receivers are going to do? Meaning, is Ingram going to have more space? Is Will Ty going to have more space? Jarrell Adams, I mean, depending on who makes this roster. That, I think, is also a big part of it. We tend to focus on what the receivers are going to do for one another. But I also think, Paul, it's interesting what they're going to do for the middle of the field with the tight end and then also with the running game. You know, that's a big part of the equation as well.
Absolutely, because guess what? If all these receivers and the tight ends are doing what they're supposed to do downfield and providing a legitimate threat to all areas of the downfield scheme, well, then all of a sudden, those safeties can't be crawling into the box and stuffing the Giants' run game as easy as they have.
Yeah. Anything else you got, Jason? I hope that answered your question. I know
we've given you a lot. I'm sorry if we held you too long, but you asked for it, and that's why.
No, that's good.
That's why football is a spider web. It is a domino effect through and through. That's why it's the best game on the face of the earth.
Nobody has to convince you of that. I'll tell you that.
No, I just had one more just for a fun question for you.
Sure.
And I'll just take it off the air. I'm just wondering, with everybody that's still available out there, I don't know who exactly is out there for free agents, but if you guys were the general manager, is there a certain free agent left that you would really be interested in trying to sign? And I'll just leave it there. You guys have a good day, and we'll see you.
Sounds good, Jason. Appreciate the phone call. Well, keep in mind, I mean, the Giants just brought in two free agents in terms of Dookie Hinacho as well as Devin Taylor, two defensive players. I will admit I have not closely looked at who's still out there. I don't know if you were paying attention, Paul, in terms of any particular position.
I would at least find out what the medical people have to say about Flowers.
Brandon Flowers, you're referring to. Yeah, the cornerback who we were talking about earlier.
I think the Giants are still a bit thin at depth at corner. And so Brandon Flowers is a very, very solid cornerback in this league. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if he'd want to come here to be the number four, because that's what they need. They need a number four corner. And I'm sure Brandon Flowers is going to continue his career. And if he is medically capable of continuing his career, I'm sure he's going to want to do it as a two or a three. I don't think he's going to want to do it as a four. But I would have no problem making a phone call and investigating his situation, finding out what the medical people say. And if the medical people are comfortable with talking to him and saying that, you know, we could have an interview with him, that would be a guy who I would probably want to kick the tires on.
I'm looking at the list in terms of the other free agent corners, and Flowers is on that list. I mean, Revis is out there. I don't think he's coming here. I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm looking at the names. Tracy Porter, the veteran who's been with the Bears and the Raiders, that's another name that comes to mind. Tremont Williams, who's been with the Packers. He's been with the Cleveland Browns. Gerard Powers, he's been a Colt. He's been a Baltimore Raven. Leon Hall, who was with the Giants last year. Leotis McKelvin, the former Philadelphia Eagle and Buffalo Bill. Justin Gilbert, the first-round pick of the Browns a few years back, who was with the Steelers. So, I mean, there's a number of names out there. But I would not overlook, and this is where I go back to, and I'm not saying that the caller was alluding to this, Paul, but I feel like we tend to lose track on, they did bring in a guy like Valentino Blake. I'm not saying that Valentino Blake is going to be the guy that's going to solidify the number four spot, but that's a veteran. That's a guy that had plenty of starting reps with the Pittsburgh Steelers, also is a proven special teams contributor. Sometimes the guy could already be on the roster, depending on what training camp shows us, as opposed to perhaps needing to go out there and bring in another free agent. That, I guess, is what I would at least bring up within this conversation.
Possibly. Sometimes a guy needs to change the scenery. Sometimes the guy needs to be coached by a different positional coach. Those things can happen. I guess my feelings on Valentino Blake are wait and see.
Yeah, and
because
I think that's fair.
He comes from a team in Pittsburgh that has had a lot of trouble filling the cornerback spot for several years now.
Even Tennessee, where he was last year, too, had some trouble.
And, you know, I kind of would like to believe that at least in one of those two spots, he could have provided an answer for those teams, and he didn't. Now, here's what I will say. Being the fourth corner on the Giants is a lot different than being the second or third corner on one of those other teams, because there's not nearly as much pressure on you when you're guarding the fourth string wide receiver on the other side of the ball, or for that matter, when you know you have that many other good defensive players on the team next to you. So maybe the situation is just better for him, and he will succeed. I'm of a wait-and-see philosophy on this. I would not mind trying to upgrade that position. I notice here on this particular list, Tremaine Brock is still a UFA. I don't know if he's on that list that you
he's
have as well.
My list.
Marcus Roberson, Brock from the Niners, Roberson from the Bills. Those guys are both out there still, apparently.
Yeah, Brock is on my list, so I saw him.
Okay.
See if
is Roberson still available?
See if he's on this list that I'm looking through here.
He was hurt. So, I again,
he's not on my list here. I
have to
make
check.
Sure.
Have to check the medical. I yeah. just don't know. But that's, you know, that's where I'm at. I would like to see the Giants add a free agent corner to enhance depth. I don't think there are any thumpers out there now that You know, Blunt is gone. Asiata's gone, if you thought about him.
He just signed with the Lions. We were talking about him the other week.
It seems to me that, you know, maybe the Giants are going to be able to piece together their running back core with what they have and use a different strategy and scheme it. Okay, so be it. I have to accept that. They don't have a thumper. They just don't have one. I know you are not as animate about me as I am about getting one. They can scheme around it. I understand that, and maybe that's just the way it's going to have to be.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How are we doing?
I was thinking about JT Thomas, and he made me he kind of brings up a theme with Jerry Reese and other GMs that seem like they get stubborn when it comes to certain players, that they don't want to maybe admit their mistakes, and they kind of keep holding on to people that maybe shouldn't be there. Like Reese has done that with that tight end from Cincinnati,
Adrian Robinson, you're referring to?
Adrian Robinson, it seems like certain GMs, besides Bill Belichick, or do you think this is, am I right or wrong here, that certain GMs hold on to certain players for their ego or just that they don't want to be proven wrong, and they keep players on a little too long?
Well, I mean, I think everybody has different philosophies with that. Keep in mind, you know, the difference between Robinson and Thomas is Robinson was a draft pick. Thomas is a free agent. So, I mean, there are certain differences with respect to that. And here's the other thing. You know, when you say they hold on to them too long, just to use your wording, Abdul, when it comes to a draft pick, it's very difficult to part ways with a player until you at least give them 3 years in the league, considering everybody's on a different path in terms of showcasing their production, where they are on the depth chart, their maturity. And I will always bring this up, and I don't want to revisit Adrian Robinson and his tenure with the Giants, but, you know, Robinson – he came late his rookie year because of the schedule for classes with Cincinnati. He was playing catch-up right out of the gate, just the way that the schooling was for him. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse when we're talking 2 or 3 years down the road. But, you know, I think everybody, my point is, comes from a different background, a different path, and you have to at least take that into consideration. But I want to focus on JT Thomas because this is a guy that I've brought up before, Abdul, who I think is somebody to watch because he's trying to bounce back from a season-ending injury that he suffered in week one at the beginning of last year. 2015 was his first year with the Giants, and he was a mix-and-match type of player. Okay, so that was year one. Last year's a throwaway year because last year he didn't play. He only played one game. So when you say holding on to players too long—
he also played at Jacksonville, right? Like
he was with the Jaguars before. But in fairness, I think you can really only look at it as the Giants' tenure. His Giants' tenure, you've got one season to go by. That's it. You got nothing else.
I'm just trying to see what re-season him to have him as the highest-paid linebacker when we had salary cap issues. And, like, what did he show to endear this kind of loyalty or this promise of him turning around? I just don't see we've cut other players that have done much more than him. So I'm just confused, the sudden loyalty.
Well, it's easy. There are two things. First of all, the reason that he was signed in some regard was because he had a terrific game against the Giants a couple of years ago when they played in Jacksonville.
Right.
And they saw firsthand how difficult he was to deal with in that game. And I'm sure that's what really lit their eyes up,
like,
and
Vernon,
what they attracted them to. No question, they felt the same way about Vernon. So I think that was the basis for the attraction initially. Now, the Giants' linebacking core, I think we would all agree, it's not very deep. You can't say that this is a great star-studded linebacking core through and through. So what's so bad, since they don't need the money right now, they've got enough money under the salary cap to maneuver whatever it is they need to maneuver, what's so bad about giving this guy a chance to rehab and winning a job at training camp? Because if he wins a job, then that means he's better than what you have, and you should keep him on your 53. I mean, that's just logical. Why would you throw the guy away if it turns out that he's better than somebody you have?
Well, I think there are a couple of players that we could have drafted that could
have linebacking. The linebacking crop was not that good this year.
And here's the other way to look at it, Abdul. I would say we're at a 90-man roster right now. I mean, if you're going to make the argument that they sacrifice somebody that you think should still be on the team instead of him, I mean, we can certainly sit here and debate that. But first of all, nobody's guaranteed.
And we're sacrificing cap space. He's the highest paid linebacker.
But they don't need cap room
right
now.
Who are you missing out that you wanted to spend and throw a boatload of money at? I mean, we were talking about all the offensive linemen yesterday and how much money was thrown their way, and it didn't necessarily always equate to the value of what the player is going to give you production-wise.
And they were able to re-sign JPP. I mean, they did not get burned in free agency this year. They were able to manage this thing. And they even brought in Fluker, another offensive lineman. And I'll give you another point, too. When you look at what the Giants have, the PA, the NFLPA says they have about $9 million under the cap. I can say that because the NFLPA puts that up on their site. They have an estimated $9 million or so under their cap. That's enough maneuverability if they need to go get somebody, you know, come late August. If somebody gets cut, somebody gets waived, they got some room now. If they need to get into a bidding war for some veteran that they really, really want, they could go get them. I mean, so I don't think they're hamstrung by JT Thomas's salary at all.
I guess my issue with JT Thomas is that it seems like it's something that always happens with Reese. With Coons, he kept Coons on when he shouldn't have been on the roster. It seems like he has a blind eye when it comes to certain players. Or is that just how GMs work, besides
Again, what if JT Thomas proves that he's better than one of those other linebackers on the field?
You know what?
He wrong?
Then I will apologize to everyone.
Doesn't he deserve the right to compete? Because they don't need his money right now. So why shouldn't he compete?
Yeah, Abdul, you know what? I almost feel like this is a conversation. If you want to revisit this like midway through the season when we've already seen who makes the roster and then, you know, if you keep him and he gets hurt and then somebody else leaves, I think you got more substance to maybe bring this point up. But I'm looking at it. It's a 90-man roster.
Early this summer, people are saying, you know, veterans that who will be to ask for a cut salary. And Jay Thomas was on the top of that list. Everyone is saying, this guy, you know, is not worth all this money.
I grant you, he would have been a likely candidate based on the production they got out of him and the money that he's at. I grant you that. But as it turned out, they didn't need the funds to maneuver what they wanted to maneuver. I mean, it's just that simple. And as it's turned out, here they are in training camp, and they still don't need those funds. So why cut the guy for the sake of cutting the guy until you really need to? Or he proves he can't do it.
Yeah, and I don't think that they're necessarily at that stage. And appreciate the phone call, Abdul. Thanks so much for weighing in here. Plus, he also plays special teams too, which is appealing when you have somebody that can play multiple positions. And
I think he got hurt on special teams.
He did. That was the exact play on a Cowboys return. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he was defending. He was right at the end of the first half.
I was right there. I saw it.
And that's why. Then we didn't talk about JT Thomas the rest of the season because he suffered a season-ending injury. So, you know, when you're evaluating it, you have to remember, 2015 is the only part of the resume that you can look at of JT Thomas in a Giants uniform. What are you taking away from last season, Paul?
And quite frankly, that entire 2015 defense could be shaking their heads at their performance. There weren't very many good guys on that defense.
Well, meaning, if anything, you're only judging him as an individual because you're not necessarily looking at how the unit performed.
Right, but I'm saying there are a lot of people hanging their heads over that performance. And as we all know, a defensive unit that performs poorly always comes back and reflects on the player. Maybe the player, you know, has more to offer, but because of the whole misery surrounding the unit, he got lumped in with them.
Yeah.
Maybe JT Thomas has something better to offer. Look, all I'm saying is they don't need his cash right now, so why doesn't he deserve a chance to win a job? That's all.
Especially since they're giving some other guys an opportunity to bounce back from injury too, and they have familiarity with those players. Plus, remember, they're also at the point where, you know, it's about competition. You want some veterans around too so you can push some of these younger guys as well. I just don't think it has any negative impact on the team right now. To me, you can make these type of arguments when you see who makes the 53-man roster and then you want to debate about, well, you know, I think they should have kept this guy over this guy. Then I think there's at least something to talk about. When you have a 90-man roster and they also brought in two established veterans, so they're showing that they have some wiggle room and cap space to bring in guys like that.
Right.
Once again, it's very difficult to sit here and counter the argument that, you know, there's no reason to have this guy on the 53 or even on the 90-man roster. All right, Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, Len.
How you doing?
Hi.
How's things with you?
Good. Everything's good. If you're a 2-14 team, JT Thomas is not on your roster, and you don't bring in the two most recent guys that we brought in, Duque and Devin Taylor. You go with the younger players. This is a team that thinks it's going to be playing in late January, and is filling up that roster with 4 to 8 year guys, guys who've been around, guys that can make 1, 2, 3 plays a year for you, big play. This particular position, I think, where the Giants are, you just don't go with the kids. I mean, you bring in a veteran to get him, to get you to late January if something happens in the defensive backfield. I think we surprised ourselves last year, and I think we found out, and this may sound like a knock on Adams, but, we had to put Adams in the field, on the field, and, crunch time came late in the season and into that playoff game. All of a sudden, Leon Hall's on the field a little more, just a little more. These signings, I don't think they would have made these latest signings if they were 2-14 last year.
And of course not.
I like one of the signings. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we don't have to see Duque on the field very much if he makes this roster. I watch him a lot because I'm down here. I just don't think he can play at this level. Hopefully he's a special teams guy and he never gets on the field to have to play it, from scrimmage.
Well, that's where he made a name for himself.
Len, if he makes the team, first of all, there's no lock that he makes the team. If he does, there's no guarantee he gets a jersey on Sunday either.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. You may be looking at the 8th defensive back. We're just trying to fill out the safety positions, and it's a veteran, like I was saying. Listen, I like the rankings of the cornerback tandems, somewhere in the top 5. I don't know. You want to argue we should be 2, we should be 1. Somebody might say, no, you're really 5. I think top 3 is pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
Sure.
Paul, your point, and you've made it very well a number of times during the offseason about losing Cromartie in that Green Bay game. And I think there's something to the fact that Sensabaugh and Trevin Wade and Bobby Rainey are not on this team this year, are not on this roster, weren't invited back to even try to make this roster. Things happened in the second half of that game with those guys, Hopefully they catch on somewhere else, but I think the Giants made a decision. We're just going in another direction. That second half, we got burned, just badly in the defensive backfield. We really missed Cromartie. Paul, you're right on with that. And, of course, Rodgers started rolling out, and things started happening. But, Wade and Sensabaugh, what we saw was they can't play it as a second-round, third-round playoff team.
Well,
it's just,
Len,
you got to go get new guys.
They got picked on by a future Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And he played a different game in the second half.
He did.
He's rolling out a little
he
more.
He was terrific.
I understand that. But those guys lost jobs on the Giants in that game.
I agree with you.
I just think they did. And
I agree with you.
The signing of Valentino Blake, another 4 to 8 year guy. He's been around. He's been to training camps. He knows he's in the playoffs every year. He's been in a locker room. He's played for a hard-nosed guy like Tomlin. And you're talking about your fourth cornerback. That's a pretty good signing. As long as he doesn't have to start for 8 weeks in a row.
I think every team feels that way about their number 4 corner.
Listen, let me.
You know, Marshall, and I know. I think I've said this before to you guys, but here's what I'm looking for from Marshall. And this is not, I'm not saying I want Reuben Randall back. I'm looking for Reuben Randall numbers. 2015, whatever year it was, geez, I'm starting to lose track of the years here, but 60 catches, 8 touchdowns, 800 yards. And I keep seeing Brandon Marshall jumping over Prince. 2015, December game against the Jets. Home game, that's how I got to be there. Down in the end zone, 3 minutes to go in the game, and Brandon goes way up, just overmatched. Prince was overmatched. on that particular play.
I remember his pass interference pushing off in the end zone in Chicago in a primetime game a few years ago.
Okay.
I remember that real well. Yeah. Because yeah. guys like that, with that kind of frame and physicality and strength, they yeah. get away with a lot of stuff against those yeah. smaller corners.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a terrific signing, you know, 2 years, and then maybe Ingram slides outside. Hey, let me ask you something about this rookie class, just the guys we drafted. You know, I look at pictures of these guys, and then I look, and you know, the guy's supposed to be 6'4", 235. From what you've seen of these guys, do they look like they're of the same stature and size, except for Webb? Webb looks enormous. I mean, he's just a big guy. But do these other guys, do they look like what we thought they were going to look like when they got off the bus?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't questioned anybody's measurements. You talk about the measurements matching what we're seeing in person.
They look legit, if that's what you're asking. They look legit.
This is not a knock now. I'm just saying this.
No.
I thought Ingram looked smaller in pictures that I've seen of Ingram.
Well, here's the thing. They're not wearing any pads yet, Len. You know what I mean? I mean, what do you want them to look like when they're running out here doing flag football?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not weighing them in pads either. He just looked a little smaller. I mean, Gallman looked even, you know, Gallman looked smaller than what I thought he was going to look like.
Well, but Len, it gets back to they're not weighing them in pads, but when your eye test comes into play
right.
and you see them in pads, I think guys appear to be a little bit bulkier than if you're looking at them in their underwear. So so the point is you're looking at these guys as we are looking at them without the pads on. When they put the pads on, I think maybe that'll change how you look at them.
I mean, let's face it. When you give a guy an eye test – you're looking at his frame, you're looking at the proportions, and you're looking at his definition. And one guy who weighs 215 and is 6'1 may not look as impressive as the other guy who's 6'1 and 215 just because of how it's distributed and how he's cut.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
that's just
part of the eye test.
And it wasn't a knock on any of the players. I was kind
of,
you know, with Ingram, I got to thinking, well, maybe he's really not going to be that much, not going to play many snaps as an inline tight end. That he's really going to...
I want you to do me a favor. You want to be impressed with how a guy looks, go on the internet, okay? Go to Google Images and look up Shane Smith, the fullback.
The kid from San Jose.
Yes,
yep.
San Jose
uh-huh.
State. Look up Shane Smith on the internet on Google Images, okay? If he doesn't look like the Incredible Hulk to you, if he does not give you nightmares, okay, at the end of the day, then something's wrong because that guy is cut out of the side of Mount Rushmore.
And yeah. Len,
you're a fan, Paul.
He's a big dude. He is a big dude, and I'm cautiously a fan because I want to see him in pads, and I want to see him hit guys, and I want to see how he adjusts when he gets hit. And when there's contact at the NFL level, and instead of going up against 210-pound linebackers in college, when he's going up against the 240-pound NFL linebacker, that's what I want to see. I am very curious about this guy.
And Len, Len.
Can I say one thing real quick about Smith?
Real quick, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Paul, he's a practice squad player. He's an insurance policy in case Ellison gets hurt and we need somebody to come out of the fullback spot.
We'll see.
Hey, thanks for taking my
you
call.
You got it.
Right.
Appreciate the phone call. A few things I just wanted to piggyback off of what Len threw out. First of all, Cody Sensabaugh signed with the Steelers in free agency, so he was picked up with a team.
Yes.
Trevin Wade is still on the free agent market. And I do think that that did come into play in terms of how the Giants looked at the depth chart overall this season, because I think if you look at some of the veterans they brought in across the board, the big theme to me that I took away was this free agency period wasn't going for the home run starters, which they had done the previous offseason, but it was, okay, how can we make sure that positions 4, 5, 6 across the board on defense are a little bit stronger in the event that somebody goes down via injury? And, you know, as far as learning from that, I don't just look at the Packers playoff game, Paul, when DRC went out. I recall, I talked about this time and time again, there was the Redskins game in 2015, and that was when the division was still very much up for grabs because that was a down year for everybody in the division.
Everybody
was hovering around 500. Remember after the bye, they have the Redskins game against the Giants in D.C.?
Sure do.
I'm sure you remember that game. And I bring this up, and you go back and watch the game. DRC goes out. First play after he goes out, Washington gets the ball back. Kirk Cousins deep to DeSean Jackson for a touchdown.
Yep.
Giants went with a fourth corner on that play. So, I mean, we've seen it before. We're focusing on the Packers game because it was a playoff game. I get that. But there is evidence that teams took advantage of when DRC got hurt in previous years. That's all I want to throw out there. So I think that over the last two seasons, I think perhaps the Giants read into that and said, hey, this year we've got to bring in some more depth and some other options to make sure that we're well protected with the injury bug.
It's disappointing that with all the corner prospects in this year's draft, the Giants couldn't get somebody. I will tell you that. It would have been nice for them to get one of these good young corners because they were four or five rounds deep, and they didn't get any of them. Now, they did address other needs. I mean, we had a guy earlier today ask us about linebacker. Well, you know, all right, Zach Cunningham was a legit linebacking prospect who they passed on in the second round. But why? Because they needed Tomlinson. Because somebody had to fill Hankins' shoes. Okay. You know, that's six of one, half a dozen of the other. You could use this guy, but you could also use this guy.
Yeah, you could use a guy that could be in line to be a starter. Plus, the and the Giants have had a track record of taking the defensive tackle in the second round.
And the trenches are more important. I've always said that. Yeah. You got to have the trenches. So I could not argue with that. I totally understood it. I understood why they went after Davis Webb. You guys know I had my radar on Davis Webb. So I understand it. I understand why they went and took Gallman, because they felt they needed somebody else to help the running back core. I mean, you could rationalize every one of the Giants' draft picks. They did not take any draft pick this year that was a head-scratcher, where you'd say, nah, you know what, there's really no need for him. They got enough of guys at that spot. I don't see where this guy fits. You know, in years past, when they drafted Kiwanuka, everybody said, well, they got too many defensive ends. Why are they taking him? You know, we've seen that before.
Even when JPP was drafted, too, it was the same thing.
We've seen that before.
Yeah, but then what happens? Kiwanuka gets hurt.
Now, of course, they proved to be right in those situations. But there were times coming out of the draft where you could have scratched your head and said, well, I don't understand the logic here. But every one of their draft picks this year made sense. There was a good reason for why they got that guy.
Lance Bettle, Paul DeTito with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've been talking about the best tandems at the cornerback position in the NFL. NFL.com put out an article. The Giants are number three, so we got into that. We've been looking at the division, the various cornerbacks for the Redskins, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the teams that have much more question marks than the New York Giants, and we're also delving into some of the other storylines relevant to OTAs here in week two. Let's head back to the lines at 201-939-4513. Mike is in Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys, you may have covered this subject, but the cut-down date and the numbers that one is carrying on the roster has been extended, I think, until right after the fourth preseason game.
Yes,
correct.
Is that correct, guys?
Yeah,
yes.
There's no 75-man cut. It's going straight from 90 to 53. That's the new rule.
If you're looking to augment your roster, what do you guys anticipate might happen? Because to me, that looks like it's going to be a major scramble with every team looking to stock their practice squad, maybe pick up some other players that might help the team and so forth. How is this going to work? Has the time frame for posting the final roster been changed? Because to me, it looks like it's a stress on general management. Plus, if I'm a player and I'm getting cut, it looks like it gives me fewer days to have my agent find a home. So what do you guys think? I'm going to take this offline, okay, guys?
Mike, sure. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the move myself because I have a coach's mentality. I don't like it very much because of some of the things you just talked about. But here's what I will say. The official NFL Football Operations webpage, which we have access to, I don't know if everybody does. I know we do. Does not have an official date listed for the final cut down to 53.
Well, usually from
usually
what's
it's fine, but
past,
we don't have a date. He asked for a date.
No, I understand
it does not exist.
But I mean,
right now
I'm going to speculate.
It's right after the fourth game.
It's usually
the weekend following the Thursday.
Correct.
Preseason game.
And it tends to be actually that Saturday.
Yes.
Is what it normally is. Thursday is the final preseason games. Everybody plays that Thursday. Giants will be in the mix. And then usually by Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, has been the tendency of when all of the 53-man rosters have to be finalized. I'd be very surprised if that changes. We haven't confirmed it. We don't know it officially, but I don't think the date is going to change. Now, Mike's point
that
about...
That would be, by the way, September 2nd, Saturday.
Okay,
if,
so that...
If that applies.
And that's...
Saturday, September 2nd.
And like I said, I think that's a safe assumption. I don't see why they would drastically change that. Now, as
they
far
might
as,
give them the extra day.
So meaning move it back to Sunday?
They might move it to Sunday, yes. Because now they're telling every team you've got to cut 47 guys.
Well, Sunday, it's interesting because Sunday is usually
the 37, day. 37 guys from 90 to 53. 37
guys. Yes.
You got to cut 37 guys in one swoop. They might give them the extra day.
Well, Sunday is usually the day you have to finalize your practice squad. So you're saying they may move one thing back.
They might.
Sunday, finalize the 53, Monday, the practice
they
squad.
They might.
It's fine. But big picture of things, we're talking about a day, Max.
Right.
We're not talking about, you know, what maybe Mike was getting at, that they're going to give him another week or something
no,
to assess the
that's
situation.
Not going to happen.
They can't because, remember, Monday they got to start preparing for week one's games. So that's another reason why I don't think they'd move it back. Could be wrong, but that's what my feeling. Now, getting back to the point that the caller brought up about how now you're infusing the market all at once with 37 players. Yes, there's going to be a scramble, but let's face it, Paul, and this is just how I feel. There's as big of a scramble when you're finalizing your 53 and guys are all across the board and you're wondering, okay, can we grab a guy that is going to improve our 53? And then we've seen guys, they get cut by the 53 after they initially make the roster. Case in point, Jasper Brinkley, he made the 53. And then Jasper Brinkley was not with the team for week one. So, once again, I don't see how this is drastically going to change the market. GMs always have to have their eyes alert, ready to scour to see if there's talent that can improve the roster.
It does put more pressure, though, on the pro personnel guys.
To keep track of more
Who have to keep track of
that
more names in that scramble.
Yeah. But the mindset, I guess my point is, you're always looking at that time of the year, is there anybody out there that's better than our current 53? That's usually always the mindset.
You feel that way 365.
Yeah. So that's not changing. The only thing you're pointing out, and I would agree with you, is the pool is going to be a little bit bigger.
The pool changes.
That's all that's...
The depth of the pool changes depending upon the date on the calendar.
But on the flip side, from a guy that may be a borderline bubble guy, an extra preseason game gives you an extra part of the resume to dangle out there. From an agent perspective, hey, this is what I did in the fourth preseason game, even though I didn't make the 53. Maybe I did enough to show another team why they should pick me up and make room for
there
me.
There are always going to be both sides of the coin on that one, because a bubble veteran would clearly, much like James Jones when he was here with the Giants, would rather be cut a week or two earlier if he can be, so that he has the chance to go somewhere else. Many of these guys are not going to have a chance after that fourth game. It's going to be too tight to the wire, and they're not going to have the opportunity to acclimate themselves to the new team.
So here's the thing. Then from what you just said, and correct me if I'm interpreting it wrong, I think you're making an argument there that maybe it's going to be more difficult for the veterans than the younger guys. Because a veteran is better off getting cut from the 75,
yes,
having time to latch on with a team and proving he's better than the younger guys on the roster. Whereas if you're a GM and you kept younger guys with more upside, what's the benefit of now bringing in an established vet when you feel you've seen enough out of the younger guy who has mm-hmm. upside? So mm-hmm. I think actually this hurts the vets more.
Yes.
I would make that argument.
I
as
agree.
Opposed to the younger guys.
I agree. Was the caller saying
that? No, I'm not saying the caller was pointing that. I'm just having the discussion with you back and forth.
I think
the mindset is it's hurting the younger guys more because now they don't have maybe an opportunity to demonstrate their skill set for another team.
No, I think it hurts the veterans more.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think we're in alignment with that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Unless, did you want to add
no.
something else? I'm sorry. Marquise is in California. Marquise, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
Hello,
Marquise. How's things with you? What do you have for us?
I was calling about the Devin Taylor signing that we had.
Yes.
I was calling to say that it's really important that we got him, because lately, like last season, Olivier Vernon and JPP played a number of snaps that I think they shouldn't have played. They played a lot of snaps, and that caused, you know, a lot of fatigue, and maybe the reason why JPP went out and was out in a practice game, you know what I'm saying? So now we go get Devin Taylor. You know, we have a three-headed core at the defensive lineman position, and then past history, in 2007 we had that, 2012 we had that. You just look at our rivals, which are the Eagles. You know, they have a rotation going on. You know, a lot of guys not having a lot of, you know, having a lot of, there's a rotation. I'm saying. So I think the Devin Taylor, I looked at the history, 7 sacks in 2013 and 4.5 last year. So that's a pretty solid help to have, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, I'm going to agree with you 1,000% because even when you go back to the heyday of Michael Strahan, Michael did not play every snap. And, you know, JPP and Olivier Vernon, on game day, both of those guys played a minimum of 95 snaps apiece when they were on the active roster this past season. Of course, then JPP got hurt and missed the final few weeks. But when he was active, he was playing 95%+ of the snaps. And, look, I'm not going to argue with you. I, quite frankly, would like to see that number come down a little bit. I'd like to see Okwara and Odighizuwa and if Taylor's that guy too. I'd love to see those guys be able to take 10, 15 plays off a game. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
Hey, just think about how valuable Dave Tollefson was for this team. Think about it. Dave Tollefson,
yeah,
the fourth defensive end. Think how many plays that you can remember. He made plays for this team as defensive end number 4. And Michael Strahan, if he was sitting here right now, would tell you Dave Tollefson was incredibly important to that team, not just for the plays that he did make, but the effort that he put forth. Because when he was in there, that was giving Tuck or OC or Michael a chance to catch their breath, okay, so that they could re-energize on the bench. And at the same time, because Tollefson was always so jacked up, he was wearing out the offensive lineman on the other team. So it was a double win. Oh, yeah, it's a big deal. If Okwara or Odighizuwa or Taylor or Kerry Wynn or Avery Moss, if any of these guys.
That's a guy like that I really
right?
like.
Right? Yeah. It's a double win if any of these guys can prove worthy enough to take 15 to 20 snaps a game.
Well,
that's a big deal.
And also, I think it's worthy if they can show that also some of these guys can play on the inside so that Spags can maybe throw some 4 defensive end alignments out there too. So, I mean, I think it can help across the board. I don't know if I'd go so far, Marquise, and I'm not saying that you were hammering this home that JPP got hurt simply because he played too many snaps.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
I don't want to say that there's enough evidence to prove that. But
No one believes that.
Correct. But I do agree with your point that the more competition that's in camp, the more depth that Spags has to toy with, maybe that gives him a reason to say, I can take JPP and Vernon off the field at times if need be because the productivity doesn't fall off so much. I think that's a fair
Trust me, there's nothing an NFL offensive lineman wanted to do in those glory days of those Giants defensive lines than have Strahan leave the field, have Tollefson come in, be foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog, and then give that guy hell for a series.
Yeah.
And then, guess what? I got a break now. Tollefson's going off. Oh, no, Strahan's coming back in. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
That was great.
Thing, guys. You said the list came in for the top corner tandems in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah, NFL.com put together a list.
Yeah, so number 3, that's a little too low, man. I'm thinking more like number 1.
I'm going to go top 2. Is that good enough?
The reason why I'm saying number 1 is because you really look at Janoris Jenkins and what he did, you know, to all the top receivers that he played against. He held it down and did what he was supposed to, man. In all these games against top premier receivers.
It's just hard, you know, not to at least tip your hat to the Broncos, who had such a dominating defense. You know, it's hard not to recognize them for that. So, you know, I think it would be pretty universal to say the Giants have the best set of corners in the NFC. I don't think anybody could fight you on that one.
Come on, our slot corner has 6 interceptions. That's our slot corner.
I know. I'm a big fan.
And the slot corner is just as important as the outside.
You know how I feel about DRC if you listen to this show.
You know, Eli Apple could have had, I can say could have had, but the interception against the Cleveland Browns where his feet wasn't in bounds. That was the reason for that.
But, I know.
You know what I'm saying? That's flashes of what we can see this season, fellas.
Hope so. Hope so. Well, I just hope DRC can stay on the field like he did last year for most of the year.
Correct.
Because that's a big deal, too. We've seen DRC have to come off the field a little too much in the past. Last year, not so much the case.
And you want to get
until
to
the end.
You want to get to the point that appreciate the phone call, Marquise, where Denver has had continuity. I mean, that's why I would give Denver the edge. It's not necessarily because of talent. It's continuity. Those guys have played together for some years, and they've proven that they're consistent. That's where the Giants want to get to. The Giants, as the caller said, they flashed. I mean, Eli Apple flashed. DRC proved durable for the majority of the season, and Janoris Jenkins turned into a top-level cornerback who rose to the challenge against the elite wide receivers within the division and across the NFL. So
the change of scenery really helped him.
So you get that in 2016. Now, if you're the three of them, as well as Spags and the Giants, I mean, now you want to see it duplicate in 2017. You don't want it to be a flash. You want that light to stay on consistently. But I just think it's an interesting talking point. It's always fun to go back and forth, obviously, from a sports talk standpoint when you can debate the ins and outs. Just want to take a real quick glance at Twitter, Paul, before we wrap up, to give an opportunity for people that may not have been able to get to the phone line. Here's an interesting question. Matthew at RTRFan21, how do you feel about Michael Hunter making the team, and do you think he could be a good number four? Hunter, of course, was a cornerback on the team last year as they moved guys up and down with the practice squad. And, I mean, he's going to have an opportunity to compete, but we're really going to have to see what Valentino Blake and some of these other newbies bring to the table before you really know how much of an edge Hunter has.
I like Hunter's size. I like his length. I like his frame. But the limited snaps that he took last year didn't turn out so well. So he's going to have to make some strides if he's going to make it this year.
And that just speaks volumes of the type of competition we're anticipating when we get to training camp. It'll be fun to see the various battles. Well, we certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. We'll be back up and running with you tomorrow as well with Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live coming your way at noon Eastern. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com.